Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Welcome to episode 95 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley, and after a couple of weeks on a Turkish beach, Jim Knight is here.
Hello.
And also, after a week in which he's seen Sir Elton John and shook hands and had a picture with Jeff Stelling, David Cameron Walker returns. Sounds like you've had a busy 7 days.
I have had a busy 7 days. Hang on, sorry, I wasn't really listening to you there, Mark, because I'm taken aback. Someone's trolling me on Twitter, accusing me of being the sixth member of One Direction.
What?
Crikey. You don't know what, open yourself up for that. That's a can of worms you don't want to deal with.
We'll come back to that, maybe. Yeah.
I wish I was.
Later in the show.
For a variety of reasons.
So, last week on the show, when it was just me and Carl, you two didn't bother to turn up, it was talking about the first manager to be sacked in the Football League, and of course it happened the next day, as it usually does with us.
Greg.
So Greg Abbott has gone. Hopefully there won't be as many as last year, but we're going to talk about a couple of clubs today. Which might see managerial changes soon, because later we're going to speak, or perhaps, we'll see how we go. We're going to speak to Ian Rands, Sheffield United writer, blogger as well, who does the Sheffield United blog, A United View, because David Weir hasn't won since the first day of the season, which already seems quite a long time ago, and they're in the relegation zone in League One. But first, what about this defeat for Millwall on Saturday? It's poor, wasn't it?
Real demoralising defeat, wasn't
Millwall it? Millwall 1, Derby 5 in the Championship. Steve Lomas on the brink, you might say. Got a busy week coming up as well. Ted Robinson is the Vice Chair of the Millwall Supporters Committee, and he's part of the Lions Live internet radio phone-in every week, which gives Millwall fans the opportunity to have their say. That's on Thursdays. And we're pleased to say that Ted is on the phone right now. And Ted, you've got two games this week. Blackpool on Tuesday night. Tomorrow night as we record, and Charlton on Saturday. Steve Lomas got two games to save his job.
Well, I think I was saying before the Derby game, actually, Mark, that football is real knows a results game. You know, if your results are going for you, you're fine. If they're not going for you, then you're in trouble. And I thought this month we had three home games and one away, which is literally an home game at Charlton. I thought we had them four games to obviously get a few wins under the belt and actually start getting Millwall up the table. But having lost in the manner that we lost on Saturday, I believe that really has gone down to the next two games now. I think Blackpool tomorrow night is a vitally important game, and obviously they're top of the table and flying. And then we've got a local derby against Charlton, and then we've got a nice friendly rivalry with Leeds that's coming up. So, but I think the next two games will be vitally important for Steve Lomas. If we get two wins, then people will be obviously a bit happier and feel a bit more easier about the whole situation. If he loses, and if he loses in the manner the way we lost on Saturday, especially tomorrow night, I think it could be curtains for him after tomorrow night. I don't know. I wouldn't like to see that, not before such a big game for us with our local rivals against Charlton. But I can't see any way other than that, because every manager in every football club knows if they get results the way that we've been getting results, your job's on the line.
Ted, I mean, I know Millwall didn't have the best second half of last season. The form really tailed off, didn't it? But from what I can see from the outside looking in, I work with a few Millwall fans. There was a reasonable amount of optimism at the club this summer with Lomas coming in. You made some good signings. You know, quite a lot of new faces into the club, particularly in the striking department. So, you know, what's gone wrong in the first few games of this season for you to have such a bad start?
Well, it does take a little bit of believing, to be quite honest, right? Because I mean, at the end of the day, we got probably a more talented squad than we've had for a long time, Dan, if you look at the players and the ability that they've got. But the trouble is, when you bring so many players in such a short space of time, you've got to get them to gel together, got to get them to play together. It's been a bit unlucky, Steve Lomas, with a few injuries to like the one that Steve Morrison that's taken him out. Liam Trotter was coming back from an injury and that. But it just hasn't gelled. And you have to look at the manager and the management team in the sense of, we don't really seem to have any real pattern. established at this moment in time. Every week there's a chopping and changing of the team because I think Steve Lomas is trying to find his best side. And in some ways, he may have too many options. You know, he's brought in a lot of decent players, a lot of good players. Scott McDonald's a good player. Nicky Bailey's a good player. Sean Derrieux's come in. These are all guys of proven championship quality. So our expectation levels did go up. But we also had a very young manager in the respect he'd never managed in the championship or he'd never managed in the football league. He was up in Scotland doing quite well, yeah, but before that it was non-league football. And so he's an inexperienced manager. And Mick Arthur coming on board, we was hoping would give him the experience to get him going, if you know what I mean. But he seems to be struggling. He seems to be a little bit naive. Some of his substitutions leave a little bit to be desired. And I just hope it works out for him, because I don't think anyone at Millwall Football Club wants to go through a situation where we keep chopping and changing managers. But he's got to start doing something, and he's got to start doing something soon.
Would he have been your first choice to get the job, Ted?
I always like the feel of a young manager who's hungry, who wants to go somewhere. But I think the Championship's such an odd division to get out of. We all know what's at the end of it, getting into the Premiership's the... You know, that's where all the money is and that's where every football club wants to be. But I believe that you need experience in this division. And I think that's what's showing. You know, I think I would have preferred to have got somebody in that perhaps has, you know, just come out of the Premiership, if possible, or just left the Championship side, or even had a good record in League One. Someone like that with experience at a football league, certainly the Championship level would have been better. Otherwise, you're taking a bit of a gamble. It's all about sort of percentages when you employ people like Steve Lomas, you know, or you could have, at the other end, somebody was saying to me, Dave, if Steve Lomas goes, you've got Neil Warnock floating around. Well, Neil Warnock's got loads of experience, and you would expect a better return out of Neil Warnock than maybe you would give to Steve Lomas, if you know what I mean. But it was a gamble. We hoped that this guy who had an impressive record up in Scotland was going to bring that down with him. He seemed hungry to the board, obviously, and they took the gamble with him. And unfortunately, this moment in time, it's not working out. But I always go back to the old Alex Ferguson thing here, where he was on the verge of being kicked out of Manchester United and he got one result and all of a sudden it all turned. And I'm not saying for 1 minute that Steve Lomas is going to be Alex Ferguson, but he was a manager who was nearly on the brink of getting sacked, and he came back and developed Manchester United into what they are now. I just hope that Steve Lomas has a bit of luck tomorrow night, gets us a win under his belt, which is not impossible, although it's the bottom of the table going to the top of the table. But if he gets that one win, who knows, the players might gain in confidence and off we go. If we can beat Blackpool tomorrow and get a win at Charlton, I think Steve Lomas will be with us to the end of the season. If we don't, I think he may well be gone by the end of the week.
Looking at some of the results, going a bit further back, Brighton got a decent result there, and two-all draw with Sheffield Wednesday. So, and even the defeats haven't been by too much. I mean, the Ipswich game aside, you know, you're losing these games by the odd goal.
Saturday.
Until Saturday, Saturday aside. Yeah. Have the performances been, you know, have they been that bad, or is it just a case of it not quite clicking up front?
I can explain every game to you. I mean, Yeovil was probably the worst sort of game you could get at the start of the season because this is the highest they've ever been. They had a bit of momentum from getting promoted. So it was a bit of a cup final to them, if you like. The atmosphere and the amount of fans that they brought down. First taste of the Championship. And basically, they nicked the game right at the death with a long-range shot that creeped into a corner. So there we go. We've lost that first one. Then off we go to Ipswich, give two home goals away and put ourselves right on the back foot. Another game that just passes by up until a time when we went behind, we was probably slightly the better side. Then we come home to Huddersfield. Anybody that was there knows we shouldn't have lost that game by any stretch of the imagination, but give a silly goal away from a corner, a free header, and if you do that, you ain't going to win football matches. Then we come to the times when we started to pick up. We got a good point up at Sheffield Wednesday, deservedly, and then we got an even better point at Brighton in the game that I think we would have won if we hadn't had Alan Dunn sent off. And then we come to Derby, and unfortunately against Derby, it was one of them games I've been trying to puzzle it through my head in the last couple of days, but I keep coming back to the same thing. Derby just had one of them days where everything went right for him. If you see the guy, Brighton, who scored the second goal and the third goal, the two strikes were superb from outside the box and they flew into the back of the net, which, you know, you don't see week in, week out. And everything that Millwall tried went wrong, including getting Shane Lowry sent off in what started out as a 50-50 tackle and a clash, and we go a man down. You know, it just was one of them games that you have every now and again where your opposition were doing everything right and you was doing everything wrong. So I'm hoping and praying that it's our turn tomorrow night.
Ted, what's the mood of the fans? Obviously, because you speak to them on the Lions Live programme, you're the vice chairman of the Supporters Association. I think you're at a meeting tonight as we record this, if that's right. What's the mood on the terraces and with the fans at the club about Steve Lomas?
Well, I think at the moment, we're in shock, I'm not so much shocked, it's a bit of disbelief, because we can see that the players that we've got in this squad have got talent. I think the criticism is possibly now beginning to go more towards Steve Lomas, because we feel the players are there, but we're not getting a team together. Now, Steve Lomas was always on to hiding and nothing coming to Millwall because of his background of being a West Ham player. I personally don't think that's got anything to do with it. He's a manager now and his past is his past. And I know he's putting his heart and soul into Millwall and trying to get the results we get. But obviously that will lead to quicker criticisms, if you know what I mean, because it's something to relate to. And fans get frustrated, they get annoyed when they can't see a way out. And unfortunately in the Derby game, it was one of them games you couldn't see your way out of anything. So that leaves you deflated. But hopefully tomorrow, when we're coming up and turning up against the top of the table side, have been playing well all season, we've not won, they've won most of their games. This division's so tight that if we can just get ourselves together and put a performance in tomorrow, it will ease the pain that is there for Steve Lomas at the moment. And then, of course, there's a massive local derby on Saturday. And if we can get a result there, hopefully Steve Lomas's career as a Millwall manager will be up and running. And come the end of the season, we'll be in the playoffs and winning the playoff final. Now, I'm
just
optimistic.
Well, I tell you, as you say, this it wouldn't surprise you. This is exactly the sort of thing we see in this division. But, I mean, so the fans are one thing, and they do have a certain influence, I suppose, over managerial changes. They can put pressure on and stuff. But really, the people who make the decisions are the club, your chief executives, chairmen. And I'm told that the chairman, John Berylson, who lives in the States, has actually flown over to come and, you know, see what's going on. So do you expect anything to come of that?
Well, as I've been told, that there was a board meeting planned for tomorrow anyway. It's not been called for the situation, if you know. I mean, he was already coming over, so maybe it's a coincidence, but you're right, he's coming over. And like I was saying at the beginning, results dictate. If you're the chairman of a football club or the chief executive of a football club and you see your team not getting the results that you expect week in, week out, there's only a certain length of time that you can give for that to carry on, if you know what I mean. You've got to come to some sort of decision sooner or later that we can't keep having this. And that's why I say the next week is so important for Steve Lomas to get results. I cannot see him being here at the end of the month if we don't get a win tomorrow or Saturday. I think, you know, there's only the Leeds game after that. And I think after the performance Saturday, as I said earlier, I think it could well be down to tomorrow night and Saturday, which is a lot of pressure for a manager to be under. But Steve Lomas is saying the right things. He accepts that things ain't going right and he's trying his hardest to put it right. But he's under pressure, obviously, from the board. He will be. They'll be demanding better results than we're getting. And as I say, unfortunately, it's down to results, and it's the next two results that will either make him sink or swim.
Certainly will. And Ted, I think you knew this question was coming. Saturday, the trouble with Adam Smith down there on the right-hand side, getting pelted with coins, and then the Millwall fan who ran all the way across the pitch and wasn't chased by a steward. How disappointed were you to see scenes like that at the New Den again?
It's always disappointing. You never want to see that. The guy that ran on the pitch, I don't know what he thought he was doing, and it was a bit disappointing. It seemed to take an age before anyone realised that he was there. But I've said before, that guy will be dealt with by Millwall Football Club. They'll find out who he was, or as I understand, he was detained outside, and he'd get banned. You can't run onto a football field like that, and the only way you can deal with that is by actually punishing that person itself. You know, people have been saying to me over the weekend that the FA should be punishing Millwall and this and that. How can you prevent one guy who wants to run on a pitch? You have to punish the person that does it. And he will quite rightly be banned from coming to Millwall for 3 years, probably. And the throwing of coins is disappointing as well. But it's something that happens all round the country, unfortunately. Mills, again, are not the only football club that have people that think it's all right to do that. But I've always been of the same mind when it comes to that. If they can find the guys that throw the coins or throw anything on the pitch, again, they should be banned. These individuals are the ones that deserve to be punished, not the football club. The football club can only do as much as they can do. It was disappointing that the guy who got on the pitch wasn't dealt with earlier or never got to earlier, but I'm sure they'll be looking at that, Millwall, and hopefully we don't ever get them scenes again, by the way. But if it does occur again, it'll be dealt with a lot quicker.
Ted, I think you're totally right. I think there was some trouble at QPR on Saturday between them and the Birmingham fans. And, you know, we talked about this last season when you had the trouble in the FA Cup against Wigan. If it happens at Millwall, unfortunately, the headlines are quicker to come when it's Millwall. And as you say, it needs to be dealt with by the club. The track record says that it will be dealt with by the club, and we really shouldn't make too much of a big deal out of it. It happens, it's disappointing, and we need to just, you know, make sure that that's known and that's clear, condemn it and move on.
Well, look, we played AFC Wimbledon earlier in the season, the Cat World Cup, not the biggest football club around and that, but they set a flare off in the stand and there was a punch-up with our stewards. The police went in and dealt with them. And my point being that I get fed up with people sort of pointing the finger at Millwall saying, your fans are doing this, your fans are... There's fans like these idiots, if I can put it politely that way, in every football club across the nation. And until people start realising that, then they can start dealing with the problem as a whole, not point the finger easily at clubs like us who are media darling when it comes to this sort of thing. But these things, as you quite rightly point out, they don't get the attention that one fan from Millwall that runs across the pitch does. And that's not to excuse that guy. Like I say, any of these people have to be dealt with and dealt with properly. If it's a criminal offence, the police will deal with them. It's just encroaching on the pitch like that, and the Millwall Football Club will do them, and they will be banned. And that is the only thing you can do with them, I think.
OK, let's end on a positive then. Give us a couple of reasons why you think Millwall fans should still be positive about this season, despite the fact that you're down there at the bottom of the league.
Can I have half hour to think about that? Football's a funny game and it can change around within an instant. If I remember rightly, this time last year, after six games, Crystal Palace were in the bottom three. I think you'll find I'm right in saying, and they finished they were far off and they finished up going up. And we're not that. If you look at the table and actually look at the points, we're not that many wins away from getting up to the playoffs, if you know what I mean. That's how tight everything is. You can go on a run of games and have three wins and you'll be halfway up the table. So hopefully, if it turns around tomorrow night, we get our first win. I'll say all of a sudden, confidence is such a big thing in a football team, and get that little bit of confidence in there and we might just run and run and run and go on a good run of four or five wins or four wins and a draw, and all of a sudden find ourselves halfway up the table, being a very difficult side to beat. And the second, from here on into the end of the season, we'll be a good Championship side that doesn't get involved in the relegation. It can happen, but then I'm a dreamer.
Well, thanks very much for coming on, Ted, and best of luck for the rest of the season. That is Ted Robinson, who is the vice chair of the Millwall Supporters Committee and is also part of Lions Live, which you can listen to by going to millwallsupportersclub.co.uk or downloading it on iTunes. Right, let's move on to League One then. And it also doesn't make particularly good reading if you're a Sheffield United fan at this stage of the season. The Blades have taken just 1 point from their last six games. Only that one win on the opening night against Notts County. The latest defeat being to previously rock-bottom Carlisle 1-0 at the weekend. Not the start that David Weir would have wished for, no doubt. And how long before the vultures start to circle at Bramall Lane? Let's speak to Ian Rans, a Sheffield United blogger. Does the blog United View on Football. We've had him on the show a couple of times before. Ian, so are you starting to worry?
I was someone who sort of preached patience at the start of this season. I thought, the plan for Weir would not necessarily be an immediate return to the Championship in his first season in charge. We might have a season of consolidation, but I think other fans might have agreed with that, but I don't think we had quite anticipated the kind of start we've had. And to be honest, we are struggling to see where the next goal comes from, never mind the next victory. We're playing some nice possession passing football, but largely in our half. I think on Saturday at Carlisle, we finally breached the Cumbrians' 18-yard box in the last 5 minutes. It is worrying, I would say, very worrying.
Ian, no, I remember watching you on the first game of the season, on the Friday night. You know, you kicked off the Football League season and you did it in a reasonable amount of style. I thought you looked really good that night. You kept the ball, you were incisive in possession, you created quite a lot of chances and, you know, perfect start to the season. But it's just not gone at all to plan since then. Was that, you know, a bit of a one-off, that performance? Or has there been hints in any of these performances where you haven't got the results that things could improve?
I think there's probably three factors at play, and in hindsight, it's a wonderful thing. But obviously, we were playing an Notts County side that was down to 10 men for a large proportion of the match, so we probably found more space to play in. I think it was probably quite a poor Notts County side, judging by their form since that game. But also, the man who made us tick that night was Kevin McDonald, who David Weir had prepared pre-season, changed his formation, so we're sort of playing back four with two sort of holding midfielders in front, three players then just playing off a front man. And Kevin McDonald was the sort of centre of those three players in an advanced midfield role. And by David Weir's own admission, he built his sort of tactical plan around McDonald playing that role. And obviously, he's now departed to Wolves. And we've signed players like Jose Baxter, who had a great goal return from midfield for Oldham last season. But, you know, no one's quite that same kind of player as McDonald to play that role. And that's part of the problem we've got. We're just not advancing into the opposition half with any sort of thrust or attacking verve. And, you know, we're relying on two strikers without really a link player to them. The strikers he's tried up there, Chris Porter's had a go. We signed Lyle Taylor, who scored, I think, 30 goals for Falkirk last season in the Scottish First Division. He's looked washed up front on his own. And then we've played Joe Ironside, who's one of our sort of academy graduates who hasn't got a league goal to his name, and it's just really demoralising to watch. So I think, like I say, we were lucky in terms of obviously playing against 10 men, and I think, as I say, the quality of the Notts County side isn't what we've seen in previous years. They're shorn of some of their better players, and obviously we're lacking Kevin McDonald, who on his day is the best footballer we've had at that club in the last 3 years.
I'm just reading, Ian, a blog that has been done for us on our site today by Ian Parks.
We are going up.co.uk.
Nice plug. And Ian talks in it about the system that Weir is playing and the lack of width, which he thinks is disappointing. Would you go along with that?
Yeah, I would. I mean, obviously, he's playing these three players just behind the front man, and I think we've got players who have been called wide men for the last few years, but don't really seem comfortable out wide or are played on the opposite side, so they always cut inside. Players like Ryan Flynn, Jamie Murphy, and, you know, it's interesting, they were both bombed out of the squad on Saturday, so, you know, I'm not sure they were injured or not, but there's been a lot of rumours about why they were suddenly not playing, and it really is. I mean, we are very narrow. We rely on in the past on fullbacks who bombed on. If you remember when we had Matthew Loughton, you know, a few years back, we had good overlapping fullbacks alongside players that weren't natural wide players in Stephen Quinn and Lee Williamson. We haven't got the fullbacks to do that. So a huge part of what must be David Weir's game plan is that the fullbacks, I think he anticipated bombing forward, have struggled defensively, i.e. Westlake and Williams. And now he's playing around with two less mobile fullbacks in Tony McMahon and Matt Hill. So, you know, I think he seemed happy enough to sacrifice the wide players at the start of the season, but the system just isn't working for us anymore.
What's the mood been like amongst the fans? Is anyone getting on David Weir's back? Is there growing pressure, or is there a patience at Bramall Lane?
As I say, I think a few of us were trying to preach. A lot of us were trying to preach patience at first, but, you know, I think someone said to me on Saturday night on Twitter, you're sort of one of the more rational players, and I'm worried when you know, you're sounding nervous and worried. You know, I think the really worrying point for me was, I wasn't at Carlisle on Saturday, but I heard the commentary, and one of our former players, Keith Edwards, was co-commentating, and he went into a sort of diatribe at the end of the commentary that was just absolutely scathing on what was going on at the club. And to then hear David Weir come on the radio, seemingly lost for ideas, you know, he's saying, we keep asking questions, but we haven't got any answers yet. You know, and he tried to reassure us that the players believe in his system. But from what I understand from people who were at Carlisle, there was very little evidence of that. In fact, the players seemed rather like robots, you know, not able to do anything away from what they've been told to do. There's just a lack of invention and thought there. So I think that interview in many ways was a real sort of wake-up call for the fans, and really, you know, created the levels of concern and worry about, you know, how do we arrest this slide that we're in.
Looking at the results as well, you've lost two big derby games against Bradford and Rotherham. You've been dumped out of the cup at home to Burton, and the lack of goals, as you say, is the main factor when you look at this sort of list of scores.
Yeah, absolutely. There is little. The strikers we're playing up there aren't, I don't think, are capable of playing up as a lone front man. We're certainly not getting the players flooding out from midfield. You know, we've got Stephen McGinn, who was a promising, you know, talented link player at Watford before he got injured, and yet when he has played, he's sitting in a deep role with Michael Doyle, who's the captain. Or we've got Connor Cody from Liverpool, young England under 20 captain on loan. Both of them sitting so deep, and without the fullbacks pushing on, without, you know, these midfielders pushing on, we're just not getting the players forward at all. I think that, I mean, it's quite interesting. A lot of the fans seem to have turned into Mike Bassett over the last couple of games, you know, demanding a switch to 4-4-2. And I don't know if switch to 4-4-2 is the answer, but certainly I think when we're keeping every man back at a corner, when we're 1-0 down with 5 or 10 minutes to go, you know, when we're not getting players forward into the box.
Against a team, by the way, you've shipped loads of goals this season already, Carlisle.
Exactly. Exactly. It's so negative and unadventurous in that respect. You know, and the other side of it was, you know, when we're 1-0 down and he takes one striker off and replaces it with another striker, we don't go with two strikers. I think it's this reluctance to have, well, this apparent lack of a plan B, or a reluctance to use a plan B, that has really got the fans worried. Because is David Weir just being extremely stubborn and sticking by his beliefs? At which point, you know, I mean, Coventry have gone past us now and they started on -10. You know, how long do we give it?
Do you think David Weir will change things though? Because I'm just looking at the upcoming games, and it doesn't make particularly good reading if you're a Sheffield United fan, because you've got Preston at home, then Wolves away, then Crawley at home, and then Coventry. Three of those are kind of in the top four or five of the form team.
Exactly.
So surely he's got to wake up and change things, hasn't he, and try and mix things up a little bit to get some results out of those games. Because let's be honest, if you don't get, you know, 6 or 7 points out of those, things do start to look very, very grim indeed.
Yeah, I think the worst thing that would happen for the club is to actually start changing a manager again. I think it shows the sort of hastiness of getting rid of Danny Wilson last season. Yes, we were drawing lots of games. Yes, we were on a little bit on the slide, but we're still in the top six when he was sacked. And we'd only lost three games all season, you know. We've lost, I think, five already this season. It's difficult to see how long he's got. And if he doesn't change things, I can see the mood and the atmosphere at Bramall Lane turning quite nasty. I mean, the other factor in this, obviously, is as well, is having the new investor in there.
Well, Ian, I was going to ask you about that as my next question, really. I mean, it's something as well that's lingering there in the background, because you've had this takeover from Saudi Arabian Prince Abdullah bin Mossad bin Abdulaziz Al Saud. Prince Abdullah, we'll call him for short. The grandson of the founder of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So this guy has got a lot of money. And he's, although, in the, you know, news that probably David Weir didn't want to hear, he's come out with a dreaded vote of confidence and backed him and said, giving him his support. But this has got to be weighing on the mind of David Weir and supporters. You know, is there going to be a change? Does he want to bring in his own man? I mean, he's only 50% owner, isn't he? He's still Kevin McCabe's there alongside him. But, you know, what's the deal with that?
It's hard to say. I mean, we've certainly, in making some of the signings we've made, I think it's been in anticipation of the money coming in. You know, we've paid fees for Jose Baxter, Florent Cavalier from Stoke. So we've signed some good, young, talented players with this money. I think the fans are desperate to see some more signings come in, and I guess we'll see that once we've got to the point in the loan window where we can, you know, keep a player through the Christmas period. But who and whether they'll want to advance any monies to David Weir for that if we're still struggling, you know, who knows? It's difficult to say with these things. You know, you hear very positive talk from the Prince and his advisors, and when they come on board, I guess we'll find out over the next few weeks. I think it's a very, very difficult thing to predict. I think the stabilising influence in many ways of Kevin McCabe might counter any move to get rid of the manager. However, you know, Kevin McCabe was clearly part of the decision to axe Danny Wilson at a vital stage of the season last season. So maybe I'm wrong to believe in that there's an element of stability there.
Ian, I guess just finally, I was going to ask, I mean, you're 21st in the table, 4 points from seven games. Let's look at the sixth place team, MK Dons, of 13. The top two have got 16 and 18, respectively. It's not unheard of for a team at your position at this stage of the season to have something change and go on a great run of form, but it would certainly take a real turnaround and a real consistent, prolonged run of good form for you to get into the promotion picture this season at some point. So you're looking at maybe in a fourth season down in League One. You know, you're always the team that people, you know, who perhaps don't look too closely at what's going on, just on your name, predicted to be one of the promotion rivals because of your pedigree and where you've been before. I mean, do you worry that you're actually going to be stuck down in League One for quite some time to come?
I think I was worried about that during the course of last season when we started to fall away, to be honest. I think the longer you're down there, the more difficult it is to get out. Certainly, you know, the money that would just be coming into the club can help with that, but, you know, money's no guarantee of any success. I mean, obviously, Bournemouth, I think, were promoted from a very similar start last season, but I honestly can't see that with United this season. To be sort of top half the table and then look for promotion next season would be the aim. But yeah, it's another season down here. I guess I'm thankful that there's an element of investment there to sort of stabilise the club, because obviously many clubs have stayed down, you know, for a longer period of time have subsequently struggled, not just on the pitch but financially as well.
Go get yourself a beer, Ian. Chin up.
I'll try.
Try and enjoy the rest of the season. Thanks very much for coming on.
No problem.
That's Ian Rands, a big Sheffield United fan, blogger as well, writes the blog A United View on Football. Right now, it's time for another little episode of My Club, celebrating the various Football League clubs and their fans in 125 seconds. And this week, we are staying in Yorkshire. It's Bradford City.
This is We Are Going Up, My Club in 125 seconds.
Hello, my name's Mark Scully and my club is Bradford City.
OK, Mark, first game you attended then at Valley Parade. Can you remember it?
I can, just about. We played Swans at home, 1993, what was the old Division 2, now League 1. My brother was mascot and the game finished 0-0.
And what would be your best moment? There's probably been a few. What would be your best moment as a Bradford fan?
Yeah, there's been a few. I would probably say beating Aston Villa last season at home 3-1. The moment when Rory Mercado scored. I've never celebrated a goal like it. It's an unbelievable atmosphere.
So that was better than the promotion?
Yeah, I think the promotion you could kind of expect, but to be Villa in the cup run alone was just something special, and no club from League 2 will ever probably repeat it ever again, to be honest.
You've obviously had a lot of ups and downs over the time as a Bradford City fan. Who's your favourite player you've ever seen in a Bradford City shirt?
I'd have to say Peter Beagrie. The things he could do with football were just magical, to be honest. And even yesterday I went to a charity game which Beagrie was playing in. I mean, I don't know what he is now, mid-40s probably, and he was still the best player on the park with his tricks and his flicks, and just, yeah, unbelievable player to watch, really.
OK, some quick fire ones. Your best manager?
Paul Jewell.
Your worst manager?
Jim Jeffries. Actually, no, Peter Taylor. He was rubbish.
Your favourite Bradford goal ever?
James Hansen at Villa Park.
Favourite shirt?
Good question.
Favourite, like, kit? Which season has had the best kit?
I'd probably say the first one in the Premier League. I thought it was a classy.
JCT sponsor, is that? What was the sponsor?
JCT 600, yeah.
Okay, and what about the worst moment you've experienced as a Bradford City fan?
Aside of the relegation, I suppose, I think I'd probably say watching us get absolutely battered by Crewe on the last day a couple of years ago, lost 5-1. I went on my own to the game, I had to leave at half time, and we were 4-1 down. It's absolutely spineless, pathetic performance. I don't know.
Talk about sort of ending it on a high.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
So we'll have another one of those on the show next week. And quick update on your troll. How's that going?
No, it's all fine.
Okay. He's not come back to you yet.
No. I don't get involved with these people.
He's waiting outside your house for you, mate.
He's actually not necessarily trolling me. It's kind of a backhanded compliment, I suppose. So.
Okay. Right. Well. We'll leave that there. Let's look at the weekend's action. I said it's been a bit down. We've had Millwall and Sheffield United. So what about cheering ourselves up by going, do-do-do? Let's all do the conga. Do, do, do. With Brit a samba longa. That's about the fourth time we've already done that.
You should do some conga after that first goal that he scored against Bristol City. That's an astonishing strike. Was it left foot, top corner from outside the box? And then a composed little chip as well for his second goal. I mean, every time we see it, I said at the time maybe it's a good move for both parties, but I don't know if it is. This is a guy that he's banging them in, week out for Peterborough. It looks like he's getting better and better of every game. And whilst we're struggling in the last couple of games to put the ball in the net, and you just think, well, why?
Should have been a season-long loan.
Zola said that the loan was what they wanted to do, but then the money, I think, tempted Watford's hand and they've taken it. And I think there was a buyback clause, but, you know, you can't help but look at it and think, you know, this guy's going to be some player and maybe we've missed out on a real find here.
Okay, Jim, you were at a game this weekend.
I was.
And you were at the KP Stadium on Saturday for Leicester 2, Wigan 0. What did you make of it?
Yeah, pretty good performance. I was a little bit, not disappointed, but surprised at how poor Wigan were, to be honest, because a lot of people have built it up as our most important game so far in the season, because obviously Wigan were up there at the top of the bookies list for promotion this year and well-fancied. Obviously, I know that they have a lot of games coming up, and that's what I was going to touch on. But yeah, it was a good performance.
Liam Moore getting his first goal for the club.
Again, mentioned him a couple of weeks ago, and he went mental, kicked a hole in the advertising hoardings. And you can just tell he's been with the club since he was seven in the academy and just worked his way through. Lives locally, born locally, so kind of all he's ever known is Leicester, poor lad. So it means the world to him. And I'm starting to worry now, seriously, that come the summer, he will be on his way. But yeah, it was a great performance. And
what about Wigan's fixture pile-up, though?
Yeah, there was a bit of preamble going on, and we were looking at their fixture list and saying this is their game against us was their first of four in 7 days. So that includes a trip to Sheffield Wednesday, away on Tuesday, tomorrow as we record, a flight to Belgium to play their first Europa League game, and then back to play Ipswich Town away on the Sunday. So that's a pretty hefty pile-up, and considering they've already got a few injuries, Grant Holt's out for about another month or so, and they look kind of just a little bit dejected and disjointed. So what they're going to look like after that long trip to Belgium, I don't know.
It's not that long, is it?
Well,
I was there at the weekend.
It's fairly sizable when you consider you've played three games.
2 hours. It took me two hours on the train. Well, on a flight, you could probably do it quicker than that, I think. Well, let's talk about a game you were at, Dave, a couple of weeks ago, because technically this hasn't actually happened this week.
No.
But we did mention last week, me and Carl, that it'd be good to get your opinion on the scenes at the end of the Bristol Derby.
Well, the scenes at the end. I mean, the scenes during the game were pretty impressive enough. Fantastic atmosphere inside Ashton Gate. One of the loudest I've heard, really. It was a very fierce crowd. Bristol Rovers fans were trying to cause a bit of trouble, and the police came along and sort of quelled their anger for a time. But I was really, really impressed with Bristol City, I must say, especially first half. Fantastic first goal from J. Emmanuel Thomas. Absolute belter of a shot from about 30 yards out of nowhere. Real shot where you just think, well, he's got the ball in the middle and he just has a look up, bang, he's in, Christ. And then the whole stadium went
back. Your new drinking buddy, isn't he?
Well, we were in the bar later on, and there was a lot of players in there. And Sean, who did my club for us, got slightly inebriated because it was his birthday, in his defence, and went up to have a conversation with J. Emmanuel Thomas, which he did, but he cannot remember what he said to him. So, Christ knows what he must have said to him. But anyway, very impressed with the football they played. They were, you know, they didn't look to make the easy pass. They kept possession, but they wanted to always make that pass that would, you know, advance them up the pitch. And they were incisive as well as having possession. But at the end of the game, everyone just ran on. You could see they're all waiting. They're on the advertising hoardings, as you know, ready to go on as the final whistle went. And the final whistle went, and everyone ran on. They had a big pitch invasion. The stewards tried to do something about it, but they couldn't really. And then something I've never seen before at a football match, and it was quite an impressive and somewhat a daunting sight. A cavalry of about 8 or 9 police horses just came into the ground at the far end of the ground from where the Bristol City fans were on, because they were all going up to the Rovers fans, and just charged like something out of the Napoleonic Wars. It was amazing. And you've never seen pace like it from the Bristol City fans, I tell you.
Tell you what, it's not helped
some of the players.
It's not helped their league form, though, that result,
no,
has it? Another
no, it
defeat
hasn't.
The weekend there. Another team have come down, very much them and Peterborough, going in very much opposite directions, having come down from the Championship. Let's go on to talk about diving. It's been in the headlines the weekend, not just in the Football League, but with Ashley Young in the Premier League as well. And I'm going to attempt this name, Pavel Pogrebniak.
You've had a mare there.
Have I?
Pogrebniak.
Pogrebniak.
Yeah.
Okay. The Pog. Okay, yeah. Poggy.
Now Paul Pogba's gone. He
Poggy got sent off for a second yellow. Poggy. I've just seen this game now. Just had a quick look at the incident, and it looked poor, didn't it?
Run on to get the ball.
Yeah, I know.
It's very poor.
Needless,
isn't it?
Wasn't it? Brainless.
Do you reckon there is a bit more of a clampdown from refs now? I hope there is.
Because it's...
Depends what you mean by clampdown. Because you mean, just looking at the Premier League stats, you know, you've got someone like Gareth Bale who's been booked 6 times for diving in the last 2 seasons.
Yeah.
And a host of other players, who, including the likes of Ashley Young. Balotelli got a few, I think, when he was over here. If referees do see what they believe to be a blatant simulation, as they call it, then they are booking players.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps sometimes, though, when players players might already be on a yellow, you'd think that sometimes
all
the refs wouldn't send them off. But in that case,
all credit to the
first half,
and he did.
Yeah, I mean, the problem you have, though, is just you get into very muddy waters of interpretation and saying what's a dive, what's not a dive, was there contact? Does that mean it can you still dive if there's contact? In the case of Ashley Young, he got booked when there was contact, and we've seen other players, you know, in similar situations. So I think you're getting very messy, but they've got to try and do something about it because it's cheating, isn't it?
Can I tell you what there was contact with? Was that Joe's tackle on my days? Plenty of contact.
Wasn't
completely
that?
Unnecessary, and he was having a really good game before that.
That was Nigel de Jong-esque, wasn't it?
Yeah, no need.
Okay, let's talk about a sort of topic that's been on the agenda of many on Twitter the last couple of days, and that is Nottingham Forest's somewhat slightly odd stance, as far as I can tell, with the media blackout at the moment.
They're doing
really well on the pitch, another win at the weekend.
Billy Davies does his post-match press conferences before the game.
Well, he started this against Leicester, didn't he?
That was the first time they'd done it. And
end of last
season. A lot of the journalists, when people say post-match press conferences,
why are they saying post?
Does it's a pre-match.
Exactly. Does he sit down and try and predict the future?
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, well,
this is why it was a really weird dynamic, because of all the games to pick to start this weird trend, he picked a game which both of the teams were potentially in or out of the top six. And, you know, Forest were on a fantastic run. Leicester were dropping like a stone, and a local derby to boot as well. So it was a ridiculous decision. It's obviously something that's just spiralled out of control. And obviously with the Daniel Taylor from the Guardian.
Yeah, Daniel Taylor's written quite well about this. It's well worth checking out his tweet, which he's written a full breakdown of loads of questions he'd like to ask to the club.
Well,
about
he did
it.
A whole piece in the Guardian yesterday about it. And, you know, it's not just the Guardian, you know, that have fallen foul of this blackout, as you like. Doesn't do any TV interviews. I don't think Billy Davies and I mean, it's just I don't see why he's doing it, because all it does is heap negative press onto the club at a time when they're actually doing really well.
But the insinuation that I read was that Jim Price, who's one of the kind of senior guys on the board there, the kind of managing behind the scenes, is actually restricting what news comes in and goes out and who gets the access to what. So it's not necessarily Billy Davies doing all of it himself.
There is
kind of pressure from within, if you like, to think. But as you say, you know, fulfilling their media duties only just, but then kind of controlling what comes in and goes out is ridiculous.
Well, but then, you know, what do they actually
what
lose?
Are they achieving by doing
what,
it?
That's a valid question, but why do they have to, as an obligation to do, say, interviews with your broadcasters who pay you money, you know, you get money from broadcasters, but could be speaking complete ignorance here without the inner knowledge of the workings of how these things work, but do you get money from papers for doing it? Does he need to speak to papers? Can he just say,
well, if you're
is he breaking any law,
your,
or is he just...
It's your press box, you can restrict access, and that's exactly what they've done in Daniel Taylor's case. They've said, look, you came to it was in relation to a game in March 2013, so last season, against Wolves, when Forest were obviously on the way up and Wolves were on the way down, and he went and he attended the match in the press box and didn't write a match report. And that's why that's the incident that they've cited in the last couple of days that's come through. And that's why they've said your publication is no longer welcome in the press box.
Well, he says one of his points, the Guardian emailed Forest explaining that I'm the resident Forest expert, so would have to do all the writing, previews, features, etc. if the club had reached the playoffs last season.
Yeah.
But they banned him from going to the games and going in the press box. So it's kind of self-defeating, you think. Yeah. Anyway, right, let's move on. Talk about another blinder of a goal from Junior Stanislas for Burnley against Blackburn in the big derby game at lunchtime on
Saturday.
And then a ridiculous
goal for Jordan Rhodes.
Yeah.
Didn't know much about it, did he?
But I thought the move that led to the Stanislas goal was one of the best bits of football in the Football League this weekend. Really good move.
Sean Dyche's Burnley team looked like they have been playing some nice football this season. It's been a very positive start for them.
But yeah, a ridiculous own goal, and which leads us nicely on to the man of the weekend, Newport County's Tom Naylor.
Oh dear, Tom. We record this on a Monday evening, and Swansea are currently playing Liverpool, which we can see on the TV in the studio. And everyone tomorrow will be talking about Jonjo Shelvey and the mare that he's had. Well, at least he scored a goal in the right end in this game, despite assisting two Liverpool goals. Tom Naylor scored two own goals and, to rub salt into the wounds, brings the Morecambe player down for a penalty just to rubber stamp the nightmare that he had. I mean, one of those days where he just wants to forget about it and move on, but an absolute shocker.
And four wins in a row for Morecambe.
Yeah.
They've really turned things around after their start to the season. Okay, right, let's talk about a team who've just had an absolutely blistering start, Jim, and that's Coventry City, who not only, as we mentioned last week, are on out of the negative points, they're also now out of the relegation zone.
Yeah, for all the talk of the doom and gloom, and, you know, we spoke to a few of the guys there about the points deduction and things, and they've eaten that up in no time. And
they'd be fifth, wouldn't they?
Yeah, on true form, they'd be fifth. Yeah. And, you know, the fact that they have overturned that deficit so quickly, you know, there's nothing to stop them going up, and if they carry on the way they are, they'll make the playoffs.
Callum Wilson, it's only in the middle of September and he's on 8 goals already.
All the talk about these home games as well, at home in inverted commas, being played at Sixfield, they seem to have
unbeaten.
A fantastic record there now. They're to kind
I
of make
did,
it
I
their
did
own.
I sort of mention that at the start, and I know the fans disagree with this, and I completely understand and am on the side of the Coventry fans in this whole thing, but I just wondered whether moving away from that just
toxic environment,
just the Rico, which come to embody everything that had been wrong with the club for so long, whether that might have given them a bit of freedom and just a change of environment could have helped things. I don't know whether it has or not. Could be complete coincidence, but, you know, they're doing well so far.
Well, they're certainly the best team playing at that ground so far this season.
Yes, that is for sure.
Because Northampton have had a horror start, 7 games and just 4 points, just the one win.
I mean, and that home form last season was so good, wasn't
exactly.
It? Nowhere to be seen.
Completely abandoned them, just the one win against Newport.
They did have a lot of chances on the weekend against Exeter. Clive Platt in particular have had a hat-trick.
Well, Exeter hadn't won away from home since February, and even that win last year was against a team who were really struggling. I can't quite remember who it was at the top of my head now. So they're by no means good on the road.
No.
And they won a lup in that game as well, Northampton.
At the weekend, they were. And I saw Ben Trasler, our resident Northampton fan, giving Boothroyd a couple of games basically to keep his head above the water.
Wow.
So, you know, they do need results quickly.
Might be a similar story in the Championship for Dougie Friedman as well. Bolton's worst start in 50 years. 50 years. They didn't.
Defensive calamities.
I don't think they had. Did they have a shot on target against Leeds? I don't think they had a shot on target on Saturday in a must win game.
Yeah, well, that's not good enough, is it?
Absolutely not, no. And, you know, of all the talk about these managers that are under pressure, he's certainly one of them, isn't he? He's probably at the top of the list, really, in the Championship, considering the resources that he's got and the way he came into the club and what happened then.
Well, it's just interesting, though, isn't it? Because, you know, right, if this run keeps on going, it's similar to when we were talking about with Steve Lomas and Millwall earlier on, and Sheffield United, for that matter. You do have these real big decisions to make, because you could equally, you know, look at a club like Peterborough last season, who lost their first 6 games, stuck with the manager, and did recover to have a really good run. Well, they went down in the end.
They nearly stayed up on the last day.
As a club, I'd say they're in a much more stable position now, even though they've gone down, than they would have been if they'd perhaps changed manager and got it wrong. And it was interesting reading recently extracts from the interview that Alex Ferguson did with the Harvard Business School, saying that he thinks, you know, to have success at a club, it's not about 26 years, whatever, however long I've had. It's 4-year cycles of what you need to build your club around, the planning for 4 years at a time. And, you know, it's always sometimes a bit easy for fans just to hit the panic button, and chairman to hit the panic button and think, Christ, we've had our worst start for 50 years or whatever it is. We need to catch up. You know, things can turn around. We've already cited a number of examples this season about clubs that have had poor starts and have gone on to be promoted, let alone you know recover to a respectable position. So it's bad for Millwall, bad for Sheffield United, bad for Bolton, but I wouldn't necessarily panic just yet.
Okay, I think we've actually done our 10 points already, but I thought we'll give you a bonus one this week. There'll be plenty of weeks where we can't reach 10. The last one is Leyton Orient, who have still got 100% record.
All I wanted to say about that is, you know, Leyton Orient, fantastic start to the season, 100% record, won every single game. You know, David Mooney, Kevin Lisby looking on fire, everything they hit goes in at the moment. Dean Cox is in great form. But who do they play on Tuesday night?
They play on Tuesday night, Notts County.
Bottom club. Lump on Notts County. It's worth doing because it happened. This is exactly the sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Would you suggest
happens every now and again, doesn't it? Same in the Championship with Millwall Blackpool.
Yeah. Would you suggest doubling that with Millwall?
Maybe do a double. You get good odds, won't you?
You certainly will.
I stuck Millwall in my accumulator. It cost me on Saturday.
They're going to win eventually.
You had a cheeky. What was your win?
Yeah, a decent just fourfold on a couple of teams to score two or more.
Cheeky 180 quid.
What's the wedge? 180 quid.
Doesn't even mention it. Just casually. That's me. If I won a tenner, I'd be going mental. Anyway, Brentford's next. Sorry, Notts County. I'm going to try that again. Leighton Orient's next away game is at Brentford after they've played.
And we're
going to
go on. We're going to go.
That's the next
that
show.
Could be 5-4 given the current.
That
form,
is
it?
Next week. So next week, Monday night, live on Sky. It's Brentford against
it's
Orient.
Podcast live on Sky.
Live on Sky. We're going to hijack the studio.
We're going to.
Sorry,
be...
Ed. Sorry, Gary. Sorry, Jamie. Move over. The B team's in. You have a week off.
I don't think Ed and Jamie.
No,
and Gary
I don't
are
think Jamie
there.
And Gary are going to be at
Griffin Park.
Griffin Park, are they?
So you might spot us on the telly next week. So we'll be there, and you get to hear that. Maybe you. Day or two
bring
later.
Your iPad.
There might be a lot more editing to do on that show next week. So that's the next show. If you want to get in contact with us in the meantime, website of all the blogs, and as Dave said earlier, is wearegoingup.co.uk. Twitter is Wagyu Podcast. SoundCloud is Wagyu Podcast. And have I missed anything else? iTunes.
Dave's tour dates for One Direction.
Dave's One Direction tour dates. All available online. We'll be back from Griffin Park next week.
Yeah.
You going to sing us out?
No. Uh-oh.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.